So, this is me. This is my website. We'll talk a lot about it. Just wanted to get that out of the way. It'll be there at the end again. I call myself on my website and in my email signature and stuff sort of half seriously, writer, editor, web guy, drummer, and dad, not in order of importance, obviously. Those are some of the things I do. I'm also a blogger, a podcaster, and a self-promoting ham who likes to give talks like this on very little notice. So what my website looks like is this. This is actually one of my podcasts that I'm talking about here. And I've been maintaining this as a blog since October of 2000, so a pretty long time. I did a word count once, and it was very frightening because it's like twice the length of War and Peace or something by now. Not nearly as well organized. But anyway, it's been going on for a long time, and I've been chronicling stuff, whatever interests me, that whole time. So if you want to go back and look at all the archives back then, you can. I wouldn't necessarily advise it. So that's my, you know, writer, editor, web guy part, the drummer part I talked about. This is my wife with her equally geeky t-shirt, so we're well suited for each other. And as I said, I'm also a dad, so those are my kids in January. They're 10 and 8, my two daughters. My day job is working as communications manager for a company called Navarik here in Vancouver. This is their website. I have been on medical leave from there since February of 2007, so more than a year now, because I got a lot of stuff going on, and one of the things that I've got is incurable stage 4 metastatic colorectal cancer, which sucks. It sucks almost as bad as it sounds, not quite, in that when you see this, and when I heard this, your immediate first thought is, that guy's going to die. Which is true, because we all are. I just don't know when. And on average, or on the median, depending on which statistician you talk to, somebody diagnosed with this will live 2 to 3 years on average. So far, I've been doing better than that, so I'm probably going to be longer than that average from diagnosis. But it's already been almost a year and a half. And I don't know how much longer it's going to go. Right now I'm doing okay. I have had 4 surgeries, radiation. I was in hospital for a month. I lost 50 pounds and gained it back again. I had a tube up my nose, which gave me this scar here. I have a scar here that you can't see that goes all the way around my belly button and all the way down. I had 25 staples in my abdomen. I am in the middle of another round of chemotherapy right now that's been going on since October and will go until at least the end of May. It's lucky that this meeting fell on this week, because if it had been last week, I would have been lying in bed going, ugh, and I wouldn't have been here. Because every 2 weeks, I get hooked up to chemotherapy and feel really sick. Those of you who've seen me before will notice that my hair is rather more gray than it used to be, and you can see the top of my head through my hair. That didn't used to be the case, but that's from the chemo. So it sucks. It's been sucking. I've had a great amount of help from my family, from my wife and my kids and my friends and my parents and everybody around. So it's been going okay. But it's still this. It's still incurable stage 4 metastatic colorectal cancer, which is bad. You don't want this. If you have a history of any of this stuff in your family, or if you are over age 50, this is the promotional bit, get yourself a colonoscopy. I know it sounds unpleasant. It is. It's not that unpleasant, but it's a lot less unpleasant than actually getting this. So go ahead and do that if you haven't. If you've been putting it off, don't put it off, believe me. I got it young. I'm 38, so I had no reason to get screened for it. Just I was actually lucky enough to have some symptoms and have them check it out. Otherwise, I might never have found out until it was all over. So anyway, it sucks. So a lot of people who get cancer or any number of other diseases or conditions or whatever else want to be, you know, need some help aside from their family and friends and whatever else. And they often deal with a support group. And in fact, there is one tonight for people who have colorectal cancer. I'm not there because you're my support group. In addition, the web is my support group. As you've probably noticed, I'm kind of a nerd. I've got all these, you know, nifty gadgets and stuff everywhere. I live a lot of my life online, and I've done that for 25 years. I started when, you know, you had to jam the phone into the little rubber cups on the computer terminal and get connected online. And I met a lot of my friends, my roommates, my old roommates and other people through, even before the internet, bulletin board systems and stuff. I've been communicating with people and getting in touch with people and doing a lot of my writing and editing electronically and online for a long time. So it was natural for me when I got diagnosed to take that online. Wouldn't necessarily be anybody else's first instinct, but it was mine. In fact, my wife said to me once we got the diagnosis, are you going to blog this? And I said, of course. Because I could not imagine trying to separate my life in the way that it would require if I weren't to put it on my blog, where I've been talking about all sorts of things in my life for a long time. And to keep that, which is obviously the biggest thing in my life and has been for the past year and a half, out of there would have been an incredible effort and would have been very stressful. And it also would mean that, you know, if I ran into somebody on the street, I wouldn't know whether I told them or whether I should tell them or whether if I put it on my blog, which I did, I can, first of all, safely assume that the people who read it, which is most people who know me, know all this stuff. And secondly, anybody who wants to know what's up, kind of facetiously, I can say, go read my blog so I don't have to tell you everything, because there's a lot of it. So blogs have been a big part of what I've done after getting diagnosed with cancer, because it has been an unpleasant process. And there's been a lot of unpleasantness that I've blogged about, and it's shown up on my blog, which has been helpful in a lot of ways, and I'll talk about that in a bit. But not only my blog, my wife has a blog, actually my kids have blogs, they haven't talked about this very much, even though they're young. A lot of my friends have blogs and other stuff, and for those of you who aren't necessarily familiar with how they operate, you can leave comments on other people's blogs, they can leave comments on yours, you can actually have sort of, when you write something that refers to somebody else's blog, it can automatically link up and say this other person wrote about it. There's been a lot of interaction there, and in fact, In some instances, not as often as would make it really disturbing, there's stuff that my wife and I will write on our blogs that we would find it more uncomfortable to say to each other face-to-face. So we will bring up stuff by writing it online that is difficult to bring up in person sometimes. Or or something we've written will start a conversation that might not have started otherwise. So it even gets down to that level. In fact, more often than I would like to admit, we're actually sitting in bed at night after the kids have gone to sleep, tapping on our laptops, not sending messages to each other, even though we're there, but doing stuff like that. So this has been a big part of what I've done with my life since I got cancer. Now, what I want to point out is one of my friends whose wife has also been through something like this, what he said to me is some people, when they get diagnosed with a disease like this, get consumed by it. You know, they join the Colorectal Cancer Society of Canada and they become the secretary and they get involved in activism and lobbying government and they organize the support groups and it sort of wraps up their whole life. That has not happened to me. If you go read my blog, there's a whole bunch of other stuff there. You know, I wrote about Arthur C. Clarke because he died yesterday and wrote about my podcast and wrote about, you know, I'm going to post up a picture of first bike ride that I took with my kids yesterday, and that stuff that's not related to that. It's in there, but it's interspersed with everything else. It hasn't turned into a cancer blog. Some people, you know, they set up a blog just about their thing, whatever it is, whether it's depression or cancer or heart disease or whatever. And that's perfectly valid. I don't think it's bad. It's just not my thing. I want to still have my life and not have it consumed by that. So I get to come and do stuff like this, which is sort of peripherally related. Other stuff that I've been involved with are podcasts, which are essentially internet radio shows. Let's see if this works. Or maybe I'll just do it this way. This is my wife's podcast, which is about cosmetics and stuff. She's talked about my diagnosis and had me as a guest on this show to for the people who are all over the world who listen to it, I've got my own podcast about home recording because I'm a musician and make songs and things, and we've talked about it on there. I have another podcast on my my own website where I just put out free songs for people to listen to because I record them and don't expect to make any money out of them. So all those things are things I've kept doing while I've been off work. The nice thing about all these things is they're somewhat flexible. I don't have to be there from 9 to 5. If I've only got, as I have at times in the past year, if I've only got an hour during the day where I feel even remotely decent enough to be awake, I can do some of this stuff when I feel good enough to do it and I feel like I've accomplished something that day. Whereas if it were something where I needed to get out of the house and go do something, that for a long time wasn't possible. It is now, but it wasn't always. No, of course, it goes back to the beginning. Comments. I mentioned comments. I'll show you just a current example here. This is some comments on my website. I did a post about how my chemotherapy is going to end up going longer than I initially expected, and had this photo of the light showing the top of my head very nicely through my gray hair. And a bunch of people left comments saying, you know, hope things are going okay, and, you know, I've been through this. And interesting thing about this is through comments and email and other stuff on my website, I've encountered people that I would never have met. There is a couple in Paris who live within walking distance of the Eiffel Tower. The husband had got diagnosed with pretty much the same condition, pretty much exactly the same time I did. So we were corresponding back and forth. Fortunately, she's an English teacher, and his English is pretty good because my French is terrible. So we wrote back and forth, sort of updating each other on what was going on. And now, presuming I get better, if we ever want to go to Paris, we have a place to stay. So that's nice. They have a couple daughters who are older than ours, but he stumbled across my blog as he was searching for somebody else who was in the same boat as him. And he found me, way over here. And there have been several people like that. Relatives friends of friends that I haven't seen in years have gotten in touch with me, all sorts of stuff like this. Pretty much exclusively because of all this heavy-duty stuff I've been writing about. You know, they wouldn't have necessarily commented, or they may not even have read about it if it was just me talking about day-to-day stuff. And my parents travel quite a bit. They have friends in Germany and Mexico and the States and all over the place. And whenever those people ask, you know, how are things going, they tell them the basic story, but then they say, go look at the website. Go look at Derek's website. In fact, my dad has a blog, too, that was updating. He started it when I was in the hospital, and I wasn't updating my page often enough. So those people keep up to date, too. So I've been hearing from all these people, some of whom I probably never met. I don't even remember. But some of whom are related to me. Music was another interesting one. As I mentioned, I'm a musician as well. And as I said, I put out music out there. There's this one fairly popular podcast about Microsoft Windows. And it turns out that the theme song from it is one that I wrote. And I've licensed them in such a way that anybody can use them on a podcast for free. And I just started listening to this show because I'm a computer guy. And even though I'm usually using Macs, I want to know what's going on. And I listened to the first episode, and there was my song as the theme music. That's pretty cool, I tell you. It's like hearing yourself on the radio, except you don't get paid. But that's fine. So every week I hear my music on here. And Leo Laporte, the guy who runs this show, is a fairly well-known tech columnist across the States. And he had a TV show that they filmed in Vancouver, and I've been on that TV show a few times, too, for the same reason. So for somebody who's a self-promoting ham, that's a pretty nice thing to have happen. Radio, there's another interesting one. After putting stuff on my blog, I got contacted by CBC Radio a year ago, January, asking if I wanted to come on and talk about why I was posting all this stuff on my blog. And Priya Ramu, who was the host of the afternoon, no, sorry, On the Coast, that's what the show was called at the time, since they've since got a new host, she was very skeptical. When I was there, I could see it in her eyes when I was in the studio. She was like, why are you just writing about all this stuff for anybody in the world? You know, and I think there's I don't know if I would call it necessarily a generational thing, but there's definitely something different going on. I say often that I have the privacy instincts of a 17-year-old. I've gotten in trouble with my wife a few times about stuff that I put on my blog, and I've had to change things. But I've got a pretty good handle on it now. Plus, she's gotten into this lately, so she's moving in the same direction. But for me, it's just obvious that I would put this stuff out there, and I would put photos of myself on the web. And one thing I don't do on my website is I don't actually mention my wife's name or my kids' names, even though I put their photos up there, because I figure it's their own decision when they want to get their name in Google. My wife has her own website, but we actually don't link. She links to me, but I don't link to her by request, just because there's some people she doesn't want following that particular path. It's a little obscure, but, you know, so you make choices like that, and I'll talk about that a bit later. Anyway, I was on 2 or 3 times on CBC Radio talking about this, and had a lot of positive feedback from there, and also heard from other relatives that I never hadn't heard from in a long time who heard me on the radio. Again, when you're a self-promoting ham, getting on the radio for your cancer is pretty nice. Better than, you know, sitting home about it. This last broadcast, I put copies, audio copies on my website. That's what this links to. When I was in the studio, my wife came too. We talked about it, and Paul Grant, who was the host at that point, interim host, said, you seem pretty well. You seem to be doing fine. This was just a week before I had my big surgery and stuff. And I said, well, you haven't seen how much morphine I've taken today, and you haven't noticed that I've got one of those huge chemical hot packs on my back in order to relieve all the pain in my lower abdomen at the time, because that's where the cancer was. And in fact, at that time, before I had my surgery, pretty much every day, 2 or 3 times a day, I would get in the shower and turn the water on as hot as it would go and lie on the floor with the shower blasting at my lower back until the hot water ran out because it hurt that much. I'm glad that's over because it's a lot better than that now. The main tumor is gone. They took that out. That's why I was in the hospital for a month. There's other stuff left over in my lungs, which is why I have to have the chemotherapy. So far, those are stable. So that's good. But, you know, I was able to keep, I was motivated to keep doing this stuff even when I was a very crabby, in pain, radiation and chemotherapy guy. And in fact, the day after this, I played a show with my band on Canada Day, which was the last show I played for a long time until last month, because I really, really wanted to do that. Because I knew in a week I was going to be in the hospital, and who knows whether I would ever be able to play with the band again. I was able to, but, you know, you're motivated to do this sort of stuff. So that's some of the other stuff I've been doing. We got down to music, radio. Okay, there's a few others here. Facebook and Twitter. Do you know, who knows what Twitter is? Okay, a few people. Who knows what Facebook is? Okay, good. They're sort of related in a very perverse kind of way, but Facebook is this incredibly popular website that I was very skeptical about Facebook. My wife was on it. A bunch of people I knew was on it. I resisted for months getting involved in it because I've seen over my 25 years online a lot of things, Friendster, for example, which was a similar kind of thing, all sorts of things come and go, and, you know, people get in and they put all their contacts in, and then it all kind of fades away and all the work they put in just disappears. It seemed like Facebook's sticking around. I eventually got in there. I did manage to get in touch with an amazing number of people that I hadn't been in contact with for a long time. And in fact, I don't do a lot of the stuff that people find very annoying on Facebook. There are all these applications you can add, become, you know, bite your friend as a zombie, and all. I don't do any of those. I just I reflexively ignore those requests and basically just get in touch with people. In fact, I don't even use it for email. A lot of people use it as a replacement for email now. I don't like that because it's all in Facebook, and if Facebook ever goes away and I've been sending and receiving email, that will just vanish. I like to keep it myself. So I've got copies of my real email, and I will respond to people, but basically I delete everything in the email. So I just use it as a way to sort of see what people are up to. And I managed to find some very obscure connections. My best friend when I was in elementary school, I haven't been in touch with him for almost 20 years. I looked to see if he was there. He wasn't, but his 20-year-old daughter was. That was weird, because she's older than I was the last time I saw him. But anyway, I've ran into a bunch of people like that. And, you know, I can sort of see what these people are up to, and they can see what I'm up to, because I have it set up so that my blog posts automatically get sucked into Facebook and published there, in case they don't read my blog. And my updates from other places go there. And the other thing I was talking about is Twitter. And it's really hard to explain why this is popular. All Twitter is an, it says here, what are you doing? What it gives you is it gives you a box in which you have only 140 characters to say, what are you up to right now? And it seems like a really dumb idea. That's all you can do. You can do that, and you can follow other people that you know who are doing the same thing, and they can follow you. And there's no relate, like, if they follow you, you don't have to follow them, and if you follow somebody, they don't have to follow you. Basically, you can keep an eye on people you're interested in just to see what they're up to. Sometimes all it is, you know, what they're having for breakfast. But it's strangely addictive if you get the right group of people on there. And I have my thing so that if I make an update here, it automatically updates my Facebook status as well, so I don't have to do both. But the strange thing about this is if I, you know, it's like a micro blog, basically. Rather than having to put in a whole post and figure out what a title is going to be and have this whole thing show up, you could just go, I'm off to chemo now, as I've done. And I come back and I get, people can sort of target their things back to you. Now, this may not work. The internet connection's a little flaky, but actually I'll stop that. They can, I'll do that and then I'll come back and I'll see a bunch of things saying, well, I hope it went okay. And it's very low friction. You can do it sort of, you know, anywhere. You could theoretically do it from your mobile phone, although I don't. And what it means is you can sort of have a sense of what a bunch of people that you know are up to without having to bug them and without them having to bug you. So I have a sense of all these people, and it's a strange thing because, it's, you know, I know what people are up to in Australia when I don't know what my parents are up to next door. Sometimes, because they're not on here. But a lot of people I know are. It's like Facebook. Twitter is one of these things where it's only good because there are so many people on it, and so many people that I happen to know and be interested in. Yes? No, I'm not. Quite intentionally, because I probably get sucked way into it. My wife was in it for a long time. Second Life is what the question, am I in Second Life, which is a sort of much more elaborate corollary to Facebook and Twitter, which is actually a virtual world where you have a character and you can walk around and fly around and do stuff and build things. It's cool. I just don't want to suck up my life into that. And so I've chosen very explicitly not to do that. My wife loved it. She kind of got out of it because it was sucking up so much time. Anyway, Twitter I find fun and cool and is surprisingly useful. Because it's, as I said, very low friction. So, this just goes on and on and on and on and on. You can get a little thing that'll sit on the side of your screen and just show you what all your friends are up to. And what's funny is if you find people who update this too often, like people who post every 5 minutes all day long, you end up just not following them. And it doesn't send them a notice saying, this person's no longer following you. They hate you now. You just kind of drop off their radar. And they can still follow you and see what you're up to. So it's also very low friction from the social awkwardness point of view. You can follow somebody who doesn't know who you are. You can unfollow somebody who's just posting too often or who you find obnoxious. I don't know. It's very neat. So for me, whatever I'm going through, I find a little social support network there, ad hoc. It could be any time of night, too, because there's, when it's 1 a.m. here, it's morning somewhere. Australia, Britain, whatever. So I got down to Twitter. Conferences is another interesting thing. Before I got ill, I went to periodic sort of web-involved conferences about various things. The ones I found myself going to were not the highly technical ones, not the ones that are, here's how to build your electronic commerce application using this particular weird tool thing, because I'm not a programmer and that stuff doesn't really work for me. What I went to are the conferences that are more about this social stuff on the internet, how people are interacting with each other and how this is changing. Stuff that's about blogging and podcasting and Facebook and Twitter and all this stuff. And one of the things I went to, there's a conference here in town called Northern Voice that happens every February, which is about blogging and podcasting and social media. But I couldn't go last year. I went this year and I went the first 2 years it happened, but it was right after my first surgery and I just couldn't get there. And I don't know if you'll hear this very well, but this was just before. So what that's a video of is the just before the opening keynote of the conference, they said, everybody in the audience said, "Hey, Derek, hope you feel better," and then they sent it to me in an email. And that's a lot better than any old support group, I tell you. You know, when I saw that, I lost it. Because, you know, here I was at home after surgery, just, you know, sitting in bed. And I got this. You know, they certainly didn't have to do it. But I'd been involved in helping to organize the conference and stuff previously. And so that was really nice. And that was, you know, there's always been a thread, you know, as long as this online stuff has been happening, that somehow socially isolating, that people are just sitting there, you know, in their basements, not interacting with others. And I think that's total crap. Because I've met more interesting people that way. As I said, right back 25 years ago, my old roommates, you know, people that who have come to be very good friends and acquaintances of mine all over the world who share my interests in things. And that's still true. And, you know, these are the people who've been helping me out this whole time. So, a lot of the time, if you just looked at me or anybody else, maybe we're sitting there pounding away at our glowing screen late at night. But we're talking to people doing that, whether you're in Second Life or on Twitter or Facebook or email or whatever else. At least what I'm doing, or even writing a blog or leaving comments on somebody else's, you're interacting with people. And ultimately, human beings are social. Yeah, it used to be that your social group was whoever would happen to be around the campfire on the savannah, because that's the only people you could talk to. That's changed a little. It's changed a lot. Your social group can be people who are thousands of kilometers away in a different time zone in a different country. And maybe you don't talk to people who, you know, I can't think I've ever talked to some of my neighbors because they don't seem to share my interests, and that's fine because I've got lots of other people to talk to. And I do see these people in person, and they send me these kind of messages. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. Flickr, isn't that? Who knows what Flickr is? Okay, it's an online photo site, photo sharing website. The thing that was interesting, it started here in Vancouver, although it's now owned by Yahoo and all the people who work for it moved to California. It started about 4 years ago. And what was interesting about Flickr is that rather than the sort of traditional model, traditional if you want to put it that way, traditional in the 10 or 15 years that the web has been around, model of sharing photos was, oh yeah, you go to, you know, futureshop.com or Black's Cameras or whatever, and you upload your photos to your private space, and then you tell your, you know, grandparents and relatives, here's where you can go get photos, and of course order them so that you can get prints and whatever. And it's, you know, you have to have a password or something to get in, because photos obviously are a private thing. Why would you want to show that to everybody in the world? The people who developed Flickr just took the total opposite approach. They said, by default, even though you can make things private, we just assume everybody wants to put their photos up. And not only that, we want everybody to be able to see them, and we want pretty much anybody else on Flickr to be able to leave comments about other people's photos, even if they don't know who they are, and to leave tags, just words that seem to describe a photo, so that you can sort of, they call it a folksonomy, or there's all sorts of other ways to talk about it. Essentially, all the people who are on Flickr looking at everybody else's photos organically, ad hoc, classify those photos in any way they feel like it by leaving words and comments and things about it. So then when you go on there and search for stuff, you serendipitously just come across photos that may or may not be related to what you're talking about. And then they've created an interestingness algorithm that sort of looks at all these things people have done and figures out what all the millions of photos out there and the thousands of people who are on there think is interesting. So you can go search for photos that are interesting, and they generally are really interesting. They're great photos. And there are millions of these photos on there that are all out in public, and it's surprisingly cool. And I'll just show you one photo that's on there. This is the one I stumbled across. This is another conference that I would have gone to last year, and I couldn't. Chris, the guy who organizes this conference, who I happen to know, wanted me to speak at the conference, and I couldn't do it because I was still in bed after having my second big surgery. So he piped me in on an internet camera, and I did a talk over, you know, as I called myself the giant floating head of doom on the screen there. And it went over really well. But, you know, not having been there, I didn't know what it looked like. So I just searched around and found this other guy that I happen to know took a photo of what it looked like. You know, and there's a room with several hundred people here, all with laptops typing away. But that's what it looked, you know, I didn't realize how big the screen was going to be. It was a little big brother. But so that was, again, you know, I found this photo so that I could see what it looked like a few days later. And these are, for example, tags that people can put down here. So if you want to, you know, label in a particular way, I could put, you know, giant floating head of doom on there if I wanted. And then if anybody was searching for floating head of doom, they would find this photo. But there's no scheme to these tags. This is what people have put there, but I can, in fact, I'll add one right now. I don't know if it'll work because of the internet. It's kind of weird, but I could just, I have a tag that I, again, being a self-promoting ham, I have a tag I've created that isn't a word. It's called mill hair. Because somebody said, oh, at one point I had a really wacky hairdo, and they said, oh, we're going to call that mill hair. And I said, that's a neat word. So whenever I find a photo of myself, I put that tag on it. Because then if I ever search for that, I'll find the majority of photos on Flickr that happen to have pictures of me in them. It's not working right now, but it would automatically add itself normally. So anyway, this is another kind of cool thing. And the other neat thing is, because of all the comments here, if I post, I posted tons of pictures. I have a whole set of photos on here that's just about my cancer treatment. So you can watch me lose all that 50 pounds and end up in the hospital with a tube in my nose and then sort of gain the weight back and, you know, grow a little goatee and shave it off and all this stuff. And people leave comments about that saying, oh, hey, you're looking a lot better. And they haven't seen me in maybe ever or in 2 years or whatever. But they can see from those photos, if they look at them, how things are going. Even more so than what I might say in my blog or in my Twitter feed or anything else. They can look and see, yeah, you don't look like a skeleton anymore. That's good, because I did. In fact, it's only in the past 2 months that looking in the mirror, I look and say, yeah, it looks like me. Because before that, it didn't. So I think we're down to the end of this slide, finally. So here's an issue that comes up. Public versus private. What should you put on here, and what shouldn't you? As I've said, my instincts are to put a lot more out there than other people's might be. And everybody makes different choices. As I said, you know, I don't put my kids' names up there, but I put their photos up there. It's sort of an arbitrary choice. I know somebody else who puts her kids' names on there, but never has photos with their faces in them. So they have photos, you know, like from here down, or from their back playing or something. She doesn't want their image on the web, but she doesn't mind if their names are. Their names are pretty common, so it's not, you know, looking it up on Google wouldn't necessarily be weird. But those sort of choices are ones everybody has to make for themselves in consultation with whoever else might be affected. In fact, I'll do something right now along that. Do you mind if I take a photo of this audience and post it on my website? Does anybody object to that, having their photo is very small? Okay, I'm going to do that right now then. So you are now involved in my privacy decisions. But I like doing this, because then when I do a post on my blog about this talk, all right, smile everybody. See if I can get everybody in. It's okay, everybody's really small, very wide angle. I'll post this photo up there, because then people can see what it looked like from my point of view, which you can't even see right now. So those sort of decisions are complicated ones, because when I'm writing about my cancer treatment, I've written about a lot of the unpleasant stuff, but not everything. I haven't shown photos of, you know, the particular parts of my body that I don't want to put on the web. I haven't even taken those photos. I don't even have them on my computer. I don't really want photos of some of the stuff that's gone on. Those are, for most people, somewhat obvious. But there are other things, you know, when my family has been having a tough time with it. Do I write about that? Do I write about how my kids are reacting? Do I write about the kinds of thoughts I'm having that I may or may not want to share with my wife directly, but I might sort of passive-aggressively want to do it indirectly through my blog? That's an interesting question. And every time one of those situations comes up, I sort of have to think about it. And, you know, there are some rules that I've sort of made up over the years that make it easy to make decisions. But a lot of the time, there's no real rule. You just kind of have to do it by the seat of your pants all the time. But, you know, as I said, when I got diagnosed and my wife said, oh, are you going to blog this? My instinct was yes. And in fact, this is the day I got diagnosed and this is what I wrote. Excuse the foul language, but I think it's appropriate in this instance. I essentially said, you know, I've got cancer and this sucks. What this did is it enabled me to get it out there without having to, you know, incrementally tell everybody I know. Very gradually, you know, obviously by this time I had told my parents, and you know, they told my close relatives, and my friends knew, and my, you know, my family all knew this. But everybody else who would sort of find out in dribs and drabs, this was just basically a nice big bombshell to drop. But what it meant is that it got out of the way very quickly. So that now, if somebody gets in touch with me that I haven't heard from in a long time, well, somebody did, somebody I used to work with, what, 7 or 8 years ago, emailed me saying, I've got some technical writing work, are you interested? And my answer was, not right now. But what I said to him was, well, here's the basic story. I've got cancer. If you want to find out the details, go look at my blog. You know, sort of in this sort of, you know, work acquaintance thing, yeah, it would be upsetting for them, but it wouldn't be too shocking that they could go read this. But it turned out he already knew, because he stumbled across it a while ago. But he said to me, oh, I thought you might have been through it by now. And I had to disabuse him of that and say, no, I'm still going through it. But it means that so many people that there would be that awkward moment of, well, I guess I got to tell them now. They already know. And I didn't even know they knew. Makes it easier. It's just much simpler. You know, because we're talking about heavy-duty stuff. We're talking about life and death. You know, and I don't know where I'm going with that right now. I don't know when I'm going to be dead. Most of us really don't. I mean, you know, you can walk out in the street and get hit by a car and die, or have a brain aneurysm, or have something else happen suddenly, unpredictably. You know, people always say, well, you could always get hit by a bus, and my analogy is that, for me, it feels like every day I'm dodging buses. You know, I'm walking out, and there's always buses coming for me, and I'm just lucky enough not to have gotten hit by any of them yet, and I'll probably have some warning if it's going to happen, which in a way has its own benefits. But, you know, it obviously has its disadvantages, too. You don't want to be thinking about this stuff. Oops. Yeah. So what it has got me thinking about is, and what it's vindicated for me, is doing all this stuff, posting all this random crap all over the web. You know, it seems very egotistical. It seems very narcissistic just to be doing all this stuff about yourself. And it's not all about me, but it's the way I interact with people. But it leaves a trace. Perhaps not as permanent as, you know, the letters that people used to write each other on paper, but a lot more widespread. You know, you can have a collection of letters that's in some library, you know, from people 150 years ago, and it's great to be able to go read those. And maybe they've been published in a book or something if the person's famous. But I know that, you know, if I do die soon, my kids can go look at this stuff, and they'll have an idea what I would like. You know, they know. I helped raise them, but they're 8 and 10. They're pretty young. You know, if I die soon, they're going to live most of their lives without me around. And having this stuff there, all the photos, all the Twitter stuff, all the blog posts, all the comments, all the things going back and forth, if they want to dig through that, or if they just, you know, if they wonder if I ever thought about something, they can go check it out and see. And maybe I did. So, that's cool. I think that's good. This is something that no matter where they are, and no matter when, chances are they'll be able to get at some of this stuff and see what was going on. You know, I've got all these thousands of photos I put up. I think of my dad. My dad's father was a German soldier who got captured by the Russians and was in a POW camp and got some sort of bacterial infection and died in a hospital in Berlin when my dad was 8, the age of my youngest daughter right now. He's got 2 photos of his father, as far as I know, both portraits. And he remembers very little, because of course he was away in the war most of the time. And my kids have vastly more than that. Even if I was gone today, they would have so much more than my father had from his father. You know, and I would have, you know, if his father had this kind of stuff up there, I'd be able to go back and get a sense of what this guy was like. I don't have a clue what my grandfather was like, because he died in 1947, you know, 22 years before I was born. And so I have, you know, I've seen a couple pictures of him. I talked to my grandmother before she died some years ago about what this guy was like, but she didn't know him that well. They weren't married all that long, and he was away in the war, and then he died. So I'm glad that all this stuff is going on. Seems weird to some people to put this much of yourself out there. Seems very odd. You know, there's all this hue and cry about how teenagers just put everything out there and there's no privacy anymore or whatever. And yeah, there's some bad stuff about that, but there's a lot of good stuff too. You know, when a teenager dies in a car accident, suddenly their Facebook page is filled with stuff and from all their friends. And their friends can get in touch with each other from all around the world, their relatives. There's something preserved there about their social network. And in fact, I had a friend, one of my friends that I knew from this online community 25 years ago, who died very suddenly in his sleep on Christmas Eve in 2007, the morning of Christmas Eve. And we had a memorial service for him in January. And it was amazing. All these photos and stories and people came out. And I gave a speech and we had all this stuff about him. Music he'd made. He was a DJ as well. All these things he's done. His daughter was there. His family was there. And it was almost like he was there because there was so much about him and so much of the network was still around. And so much of it was online. So people from all over the world knew about it and said something about it. And I set up a page where I archived a bunch of this stuff. That brings up sort of my final question about this, where it's gone. How to keep myself alive, which I'm working hard to do. So far it's working okay. But how do I keep all this stuff online alive? This is not something that people have really figured out. You know, if you have a website and you have your Flickr photos and you have your email and you have your Twitter posts and your Facebook page and this and that, whatever, what happens when you're dead or you disappear or whatever? How long before that stuff just starts disappearing? You know, my website, I've got to pay every year to keep it maintained, to keep the server running in some place in Texas, I think. I'm not even sure. If I stop paying that bill, or if I, you know, don't happen to tell my wife or somebody else where the information is to pay that bill, eventually the website will just disappear. There are archives that you could find it. But if you went to go to penmachine.com, you know, 5 years after I die, will it be there? Unless I make some plans, and probably not. Similarly, I mean, a lot of the photos and stuff may stay there, assuming that these sites continue. You know, these companies do go out of business, and that stuff disappears. And people do try to archive stuff, but, you know, in 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years, I'd be hoping that some of this would still be kicking around, but I have no way to ensure that. And what I've been wondering, because I've had to ask myself these questions, is, you know, do I need some sort of digital executor, one of my friends or somebody else who will get all my passwords and my login information and stuff, and can be entrusted to make some sense of it and try to preserve the stuff that's important, at least so that my kids can see it or something? Probably. I haven't done that. And you have to wonder, you know, what's going to happen to any of you if you have this kind of stuff going on. And important things, too, like, you know, your online banking information or any number of other things. Who would be able to get into it? You know, this was a question that came up after 9/11 for the big brokerage firm, Cantor Fitzgerald, that had most of their employees in the World Trade Center. There was a whole bunch of very important financial banking information for thousands of people that nobody knew how to get at because all the people who knew the passwords were dead. So that company had to get together and get people brainstorming about what people's passwords might have been from what they know of them. You know, what are their pets' names or where did they like going on vacation? And very slowly they managed to worm out some of that stuff. But, you know, that's the kind of question that comes up now. You can't just open the filing cabinet or, you know, get a new key made and open it up. Sometimes, especially people who are really paranoid about security and really, you know, really guarded about their privacy and worried about identity theft and stuff, if they die, sometimes there's going to be no way to get at some of that stuff. If they've encrypted it all and put it in with these impossible passwords that only they know, it's gone. So keep that in mind. You know, it's worth putting your master password in your safety deposit box or something. If it's, you know, your mom who wants to see your stuff, and if you don't mind her knowing, it'd be good to have a way for that to be easy rather than having to track down some sort of intelligence community person to figure out how to get at. At least you should be thinking about who you want to be able to get at stuff later, if anybody. I mean, if you want all your stuff to disappear, you have to put in some good effort to have that happen, but it's possible. So my answer to this question is hell if I know. But it's worth asking. All this stuff has made me think a lot about things that I wasn't thinking about before and do things that I didn't think about before. Yeah?
Do you keep your entries on the computer or print them out? Or just...
Well, they're all backed up. I periodically have a copy of my entire website on my computer. So it's all on my computer in addition to being online. And there are copies of it in various places. So yeah, not in a very formal way, but it is, yeah, there are, it is copied around. I sort of, another thing that's come out of this for me is, again, I've been vindicated in my instincts for before. I have one website. Yeah, I'm involved in these podcasts and other associations and stuff. But my main thing is my one website, and it's all there. Some people, well, including my wife, for example, they've started blogs and then shut them down and deleted them, started other ones, have three or four going about different things, and there might be some that are private and some that are public, and that's fine. You know, but I actually want this stuff to stick around. So if you bookmarked a post that I made in 2002, it's still there. If you go to that address, it'll still come up. And I've made an effort, even when I redesigned my website and stuff, made an effort to make sure that all the old, as much of the old stuff as possible sticks around. And that's one of the reasons, is that, you know, I don't want it all to break. I want it to be relatively straightforward to maintain if I go away. So, yeah, but again, that's something you need to think about. Or maybe you don't care. I mean, a lot of, again, this is one of the things, if you're a teenager and you're putting up all this stuff in your Facebook account, you may not really, at a deep level, care if Facebook goes away. It's like, well, okay, that was, you know, 2 years ago. Who cares? That's fine. And certainly, it's more than most people have ever had of records of that part of their life or their relatives' lives or anything else. So, you know, it's not, I don't think you should necessarily be obsessive about it, but it's worth keeping in mind. I think that's it. If you have any further questions, I'm done. Well, that, just for the recording, the question is, how do I keep up with all this stuff? Well, one, I've been able to do a lot more easily since I've been on full-time disability, because I'm sitting around the house a lot, especially when the kids are at school. But I think, like anything, this is basically one of my main hobbies. And you make time for the things that you enjoy doing. If I was a gardener, I'd be out in the garden. If I liked fishing, I'd be out fishing. I did ride my bike and, you know, have started to again because that's what I enjoy doing. Or if you like going to the gym or swimming or hiking or whatever, you find the time to do the things you enjoy. I certainly don't think everybody should be doing all this stuff. And there are people who do way more than I do. There are people who somehow turned all this stuff into a way to make a living. I haven't managed that. But the people who do that, they're basically online all day long. And there are people I know who, you know, they write blogs. Well, I know somebody, her job is writing blogs about particular celebrities. And sometimes she hates it. She doesn't want to write anything about whoever it is. I don't remember. She doesn't do the Britney Spears one, but she does do the woman who played Lizzie McGuire. I can't remember her name now. Anyway. Sorry? Hillary Duff. Yeah, she does the Hillary Duff one. And sometimes she's like, I can't stand, I see her little Twitter posts. Can't stand Hillary Duff today. Too much Hillary Duff going on. But she's got to do it. And I'm like, yeah. You know, I sort of have my own self-imposed thing that I'd like to, on average, post one thing a day on my website. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. I wouldn't want to be compelled to be writing everything I could possibly find about Hillary Duff all day long. But some people do. And that's their job. And, you know, that's why they pay you, because it's not always fun. So, yeah, it's a matter of finding the time. I don't really know how I do it. I just do. Yes?
But you haven't given it too many caveats.
Not yet.
Oh, you're not finished.
Well, no, I'm finished, but what's your question?
Well, you know, all the sort of letting it all hang out, to me, it's got, you know, a red flag. And is that just me?
What is your red flag? What worries you?
Do I want everybody to know everything, and, you know, how could it come back?
Yeah, well...
is that important for people to know that I'm now, you know... making dinner?
It's not.
Do you have any caveats? Generally?
Well, there are caveats. One thing, as I'll say, is when you get into cancer treatment, it is remarkable how quickly you hear about all these miracle cures that no one in the medical community seems to know about, all of which are different and contradictory and seem to cost money. The other one is, it is remarkable how many extremely wide-ranging religious opinions there are about what you should do. I've gotten a lot of those, none of which really interest me. So you get them from random people you don't know. And also, more awkwardly, you get them from people you do know or who are related to you and who really want you to do this one thing or another. And if you're not interested, they may be offended by it. So there's certainly that. I haven't found a lot of downside for me personally. It's probably just because of, I'm a pretty optimistic guy and I haven't made too many enemies. And hey, I've got cancer and maybe I'll be dead in 3 years, so who cares? You know, if I offend somebody, their problem, not my problem. So there's a benefit to that as well. There are downsides. And it really, again, this is something you really would have to decide for yourself what you'd be comfortable. And in fact, some people construct an entire I wouldn't necessarily call it false, but alternate persona. And everybody really is doing that when you're putting yourself online or when you're standing in front of a group of people saying something. You're putting out what you want people to see. And that's what I'm doing, and that's what everybody's doing. There's stuff I'm not talking about, and things I wouldn't bring up unless I'm putting the sunny side up here, and you had to ask about it because it's not something I brought up. Although I had it in my mind that I would have to answer that question. So, back in the back there.
For anyone who's thinking about starting a blog and doesn't have your technical background, what type of software would you recommend?
You don't need any software. I would recommend you go online to. If you go to my website, you can go to my talk that I gave about 2 years ago to the EAC about this topic. But really, there's a bunch of places you can go. The ones I like, there's one called WordPress.com and Blogger.com. They're both really easy. You can be set up in 5 minutes or less. If you want to have, yourname.com point to that, you can set that up relatively easily. It may cost you $10 a year or something. I would recommend that because, by default, you get something that's, jiminycricket.blogspot.com or jiminycricket.wordpress.com. I prefer to own my own in case I ever want to move it somewhere else. So, I have penmachine.com that's mine, which I have to keep paying for. And again, that's one of those things that somebody would have to keep paying the bills for if I ever went away. So, but in general, you can just go to those sites and set something up and get it started and don't worry about that. In fact, what happens is all that ends up happening is blogvancouver.com gets pointed to your WordPress blog. So really, for you, nothing changes. So that's what my wife does, for example. That's probably what I would do now if I hadn't done all this wacky-ticky stuff 8 years ago instead. So it's really, really easy. In fact, it's easier than getting your email working most of the time.
Do you get your doctors to read it, and do they worry about their performance by knowing that?
The doctors I'm involved with are all way too busy to care, as far as I can tell. I mean, they know that I have a website. I haven't told them. I don't expect them to read it. If they want to know something from me, I'm going to tell it to them directly. None of them seem particularly bothered about it. I have mentioned them by name. I haven't yelled about them too much. I was a little frustrated before my surgery because the dates kept changing, but it turned out the reason for that was they were really concerned and they kept trying to push the dates up rather than the other way, which is usually what happens. So I was all upset because I didn't know where the dates were going and they were just trying to get me in earlier. So I can't complain about that. And in retrospect, my later posts say, that's what was going on. They've all been fantastic. I've gotten into some interesting, another one on the sort of downside is when you get I never understood these people. Americans who are very rapidly in favor of the way their healthcare system works, coming to say how much ours must suck because of how badly things have gone for me, and I have to say to them, I can't imagine this actually having gone any better, and the most expensive thing I've had to pay for was parking at the cancer agency. How much was your last MRI? I usually ask them. Something like $8,000 or $10,000. So you get into if you have to have a thick skin sometimes because you do get random people who have their agenda who want to use your forum. And of course there's spam and crap on my website all the time too, so that's there in the red. Yes.
How do those people find you and those people with the miracle cures and the religious?
There are people who seem to be just searching for anybody who has cancer and wants to give them the good news. Or they come across, I have no idea really. They just show up. they're Googling or they're coming in through some other web. It's just, you know, it's like, it's how you find anything. Like that guy in France who found me just because he was looking for somebody. He was looking for somebody and he turned out to be a normal guy and we got into a good conversation. I've had a lot of other people, but, you know, usually if you just ignore them, and I leave most of the comments up if they're not actually spam, if they're not just trying to sell something, or if, well, even if they're pretty obnoxious, I've generally left them, but I it's my blog, I can delete the comments if I want, and I do, if necessary.
And apart from you, in your own sense of satisfaction, you have a website there, which is incredible, like, for information. Like, if someone is come across your website, you see your journey, and you see the tasks, the explanation of the stuff that you learned along the way, this is absolutely amazing.
Well, I think that's one reason I'm doing it, because there's a lot of stuff I didn't know. You know, when if you don't have cancer, or don't know anybody who's had it, you don't really know what chemotherapy is or what radiation therapy is. What does it involve? I've detailed on there, not in too much excruciating detail, but it's like, okay, what happens when I go and get my chemo every 2 weeks? What do they do? You know, where do they put the needle? How long does it take? What do I feel like? Did all my hair fall out? No, but some of it did. What happened? And all these procedures, I've talked about it, and you can go through and follow the course. And some people have told me that's very helpful because there's stuff they didn't know. Or just, even if they knew it and they'd been through it, they go, well, they can say, oh yeah, it's the same for you, or it's a bit different for you. And that means that, you know, what's happening to me isn't necessarily what's going to happen to everybody, and maybe it won't be the same next week when something happens. So yeah, it's been helpful, and it's been helpful for me to read about other people's experiences where they've had, you know, to know that several of the people who were in the same boat as me a year ago who are now done. They're finished their chemo, they have their surgery, it's over. There's no evidence of cancer in their systems and they're going on with their lives. Too bad I'm not there yet, but maybe I could get there. You know, when you get diagnosed with cancer, your thought is, I'm going to die. And you find out when you go to the cancer agency and read all this stuff, not necessarily. So that's good news. You get that stuff, but this stuff goes on my blog, and some of it's very personal. It's not just random, I want to sell you stuff. It's, you know, my cousin took this, you know, incredibly intensive intravenous vitamin C therapy, and you should just stop taking chemo and do this, because she was cured. And my thought is, I'm not, you know, I've actually seen the studies, and it's probably better if I stick with what I've got right now. There are people who want you, or people who just want you to, you know, read The Secret, and just wish that you're going to get better, and you will.
Do you remember having regretted putting anything on?
I tend to blank out my regrets, but not anything to do with this. There have been, you know, there are a few things, which I won't repeat because obviously I regret putting them up, that I put up maybe some years ago, especially when I was early in getting into this. Stuff that turned out to be something I said that it's easy for it to be mistaken in the wrong way, which I ended up either deleting or changing later. But to do with the cancer, no, not really. Not so far. I'll take
one more question.
Yeah, one more, and then we got to finish up.
I'm just curious that you did not mention YouTube.
I do. Well, I've only recently started getting into it because videos for me kind of awkward to do. But yeah, there's my wife took. Or no, sorry, was it my daughter? I think it was my wife. She took one little video of me in the hospital when I was still in my bed, basically saying, "Oh, I'm here. I haven't written in my blog in a while." And she posted it up on her blog just so people could see that I was still kicking around. So, yeah, that would be a good way to do stuff, too. And my kids have posted up some stuff on YouTube, not about this, but just generally. So some of the stuff like that, hope you get better, Derek thing, that's an example of that. And it is. There are, if you look on my website, there is some stuff like that on there. I haven't done a lot of it just because I'm a writer and editor. I like the words more than the visuals, and that's just me. I think, you know, other people would they'd be posting a new video thing every day, and that would be great too. So there we go. I think we're done.
Derek, I want to thank you on behalf of all of us, and I'll just make a couple of comments. I've been through friends and my sister having cancer, and I think it takes great courage to be able to be open about it like this and to talk openly to us and to that incredible community that you've discovered out in the global village there. And so I very much salute you for that, and indeed thank you for this evening. And you've, for me, raised a couple of incredible issues. One of them is just, I mean, I'm in my 60s now, sort of rethinking where I am in life, I guess, both in terms of what's happening with social networking and so on. I am on Facebook, and people kind of laugh at me at my age, and, you know, why am I on Facebook and so on, but there are incredible things happening, and even just being able to keep in touch with people in this room who are students of mine at Douglas College is quite an incredible thing. And so that just the very fact, and I think you point this out brilliantly, the nature of personal communications is when you have close friends in Paris but you don't know your neighbor, that's an interesting world. And I was very taken by your concern about how long will it last, because I have an old yellow photo album of my father's and my mother's family as well. And there are these photos which we treasure very much and look at and try to think, who were these people and how did they live and what did life mean to them and so on. And then I look at my own children, where we have them on, you know, Kodakolor
print. Yeah, oh, print.
And actually, when my wife and I came to Vancouver, we brought with us about 2,000 slides. We don't know what to do with them. I mean, I'm not going to go and personally digitize each one, because that'll take up the rest of my life. But these are very interesting issues, and certainly I think a lot, you know, about what sort of memory I'm going to leave my sons. As you're thinking about your children as well. And I think that's a very personal and very important issue for us. I'll be paying attention to you over the next little while to see whether or not putting it on a DVD will preserve it or not, and so on. Some really interesting issues. So thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having me.
We have a chapter's book certificate for you.
Great.
And it does have some strict restrictions. You cannot buy books on blogging. Maybe we'll allow a few books on, or, you know, a book on drumming.
Yeah, well, I don't need to buy any books on blogging.
But we'd love you to get a great novel and just really get into
that's
it.
Good.
So
sounds
that's
good.
What we're hoping you'll do. So thank you very much on behalf of all of us.
Thank you.